Hello. Great day, everyone. So how good are you at playing office politics? I absolutely love office politics, said no one ever. So, you know, I'm kidding. However, there really is something here for us to learn and talk about and discuss. Office politics have probably been around just as long as we've had offices. And so it can be one of the most challenging and stressful parts of working in an organization is when you don't feel comfortable with office politics, you're not navigating them well, and you feel like everything's against you. So office politics have ruined many, many careers. I don't want yours to be one of them. So let's dive into the details today as we prepare to lead above the grind. Let's get started. Hello, everyone. Hi there. Welcome to another episode of the Coffee with Rhonda Show. We are your cup full of inspiration, revelation, and wit for today's savvy leader. Today is season 8, and we are on episode 95. So we've got a good one for you today. So did you all catch that little catchy saying at the end there? They'll never take our freedom. It's just so much fun. I just love the little ending joke. So again, thanks for tuning in. Before we get started, of course, we would love for you to check out our YouTube channel and subscribe. If you have not done so already, you can do that at coffeewithrhondashow.com. And then right now, if you're watching live or on the replay, stop, pause, hit the like button on the video, and share it to your network, because there is someone out there who needs to hear this conversation today. I promise you, they will thank you for it later. So with all that being said, my name is Rhonda Y. Williams, and I'm your host for the show. I am what I like to call, I am what I like to call an arsehole, or a recovering stressed out leader. Today, I believe it is imperative that we modernize our leadership to include well-being and continuous growth and education on a personal and professional side. So you can learn more about the work we do in the world at atgleadership.com. And today, I have my cool little cup that I bought back from Hawaii when we were there. And in my cup, I have coffee, a bit of cocoa, and a dash of hazelnut cream. So that's what I've got in my cup today. Let's get to our super caffeinated co-host. Let's say hello to Marae. Hey, good evening to you, Marae.
Hello, good morning to you. And it's evening on my side. And I'm always trying to stay awake. I'm tuning in from Perth, Australia. This is the Greatness Engineer, as you know me. And you know that, you know, I'm spending my time to really look for the greatness into people and really focusing on women in male-dominated, you know, industry, and helping them to be more visible and pushing for the number to increase in those industries. So, and today I have something special. I have actually juice, green tea juice, plus some ginger, plus something else, but we're going to talk about it later. So I'm not going to.
Marae always lets us
stay away.
Well, what that other special ingredient is in the cup. Thank you. Thanks, Marae. Hey, good day to you, Ms. Roz. It's great to see you. How are you this morning?
I'm good because I am stationary, honey. Yes, I'm not moving around. My client is taking a nap. I'm happy. So I get to, you know, focus today. It's wonderful. But I'm Ross Jones, the CEO and owner of Jacksonville's Best Caregivers, located here in the sunny state of Florida. And I take care of your loved one. And why do I do it? I do it to help the caregiver to reduce that SOS on their journey, which is being stressed, overwhelmed, and also providing safety and security. When you can't do it all, you give us a call. And in my cup, I have, let me see, wait a minute now, organic dandelion tea with a little honey and lemon.
Oh, nice. Mm.
Very we'll nice. Had something at the end of the show as well for you.
Okay. I got some of that over here on the table, but I won't show.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so Roz, has anyone ever told you, before we introduce Niven, has anyone ever told you that you clean up well?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, soap and water does wonders. Yes.
I'm not talking about that. Here's what I'm talking about. You were just the belle of the ball. Oh my goodness.
Wow. Oh, I love this dress. Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh, Roz. Love it, love it, love it. I was like, this is our co-host. Look at her. She's all dressed up and ready to go.
You won't see that again for a long time, honey. You better hold on to it.
Well, you were
beautiful.
Yeah,
I went to a friend's wedding. I helped her. Her mother wasn't able to make it at the last minute. So, you know, I was kind of the step-in mother of the bride coordinator. So I dolled up.
Wow, you were probably the star of the show as well. I wonder if the bride regretted inviting you. You may have upstaged her.
I was trying not to, but I think I did.
Oh my goodness, Roz. I just wanted to give you a shout out for that because you were absolutely stunning. You. Absolutely mm-hmm. love that. All right. So now I want to introduce our special guest for today. I'm super excited to have her here with us. And today joining us on the show is our special guest, Niven. Oh my gosh, Niven. You and I talked just for briefly, and I was like, oh, this is going to be a really, really great show. So Niven is the author of If You Don't Do Politics, Politics Will Do You. And she's also a strategy and culture facilitator for global clients in industries as diverse as financial services, retail, media, and manufacturing. I'm so excited to have you here on the show a bit, Niven. Tell us a little bit about the work that you do in the world, and then tell us what you have in your cup.
Oh, gosh. Okay. So first of all, let me be the loser in the group, because I said to you, Rhonda, before the call, gosh, I can't believe how thorough and well-informed and helpful all of your emails were. So clearly it is entirely my fault that I have nothing except water, because that was part of the email that I clearly didn't read. Because if it was there, you would have sent it, I'm sure. So my work, interestingly started about 5 years ago. So I have had a range of very senior positions in my career. In fact, the first executive position I had was when I was 29, which really is ridiculously young. And frankly, I would not have hired me as the CEO. And so how this board hired me, I don't know. But I'm glad that they did, because I did grow into the position. And what I realized a few years ago was that, gosh, there were so many things I was taught in my career, in my postgraduate degrees, in leadership development programs, in all manner of things. But gosh, the stuff around power and politics, this is not something anyone ever teaches you. This is stuff you have to learn. You have to learn often by yourself and often the hard way. And so it was a complete accident, actually, that I ended up doing this stuff. It was a very good friend of mine who has a very successful leadership development company and needed a module done on power and politics, and spoke to me about it. And my first reaction was to quite audibly scream with disgust at the thought. I'm like, oh, no, office politics. No, 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 no. I know you're my closest friend. You've heard all kinds of stories through the course of my career, but are you kidding me? I'm so allergic to that stuff. How am I going to talk about it without having some kind of visceral reaction? And then funnily enough, not even 6 weeks later, I actually was fired from my job, which came as quite a shock, as you can imagine, not least because I'd just gotten a fantastic performance evaluation. I'd gotten a big fat bonus. I was a rock star. And it was dressed up as a retrenchment. But it was actually my partner who had to point out the horrible truth. Sweetheart, you haven't been retrenched. I know that retrenched, made redundant, let go. I know there's a huge amount of money in your bank account because legally they're required to do that. I know that this is the letter. But honey, you've been fired. What? I have not. I'm a rock star. And of course, actually, I realize now that I had been. At my level, given all of the sensitivities, it was positioned as a retrenchment, but it wasn't that at all. And so it just got me thinking about this opportunity to do power and politics work. And I then took a few months to reflect on my career and, you know, not the times where I shot the lights out, but the times where I really hit my head against a brick wall. And to also realize that these were never about technical issues. I mean, technically, I know what I'm doing. I'm good at a job that you give me. It was always political and relational. And then in that time to also really research politics and power and understand much more about a subject that I never had. And that was 5 years ago. And much to the delight and surprise of my colleagues, who said, but how can you be teaching this stuff? You were so bad at it. I now actually am much better at it. And I'm certainly much better at teaching it, knowing what I didn't know I needed to know and sharing what other people don't know they need to know.
Oh my goodness, Nevin, that is, what a shocking moment, right? When you think that you're the rock star and all of a sudden you hear, yeah, no, you've been fired, right?
No, actually you've been wonderful and it's a Friday, but just don't come in on Monday and here's a letter and here's a whole bunch of money. It was quite the formative experience of my career, I can tell you that.
Oh my goodness. All right. So I want to say, before we move on, I want to say good morning to Regina out there in San Antonio. Hey, sis, how are you? She'll be having delicious coffee in her cup in just a moment. Hey, Brian. Brian says, great discussion. Great to see you, Brian. Hey, are you drinking something, Brian? We'd like to know what's in your cup if you are. And then mom's out there. She's like, oh, good morning. I'm out handling auto repairs. That means mom doesn't have that super good stuff in her cup that she has. Every show, she's got something amazing in her cup. So, but thanks for tuning in, mom. And so I want to start, Nevin, with your opening quote. So I'll share this opening quote with everyone. Then I'll read it out for those listening later in the audio version. And then I want you to share with us, Nevin, that tell us a little bit more about why this. And I know that this is also the title of your book. So here is Nevin's opening quote. And the quote says, if you don't do politics, politics will do you. Oh my goodness. Now that is really something to think about. And it's something that I've been thinking about and sitting with for a bit, because especially as a person who used to constantly say, I don't do politics, mm-hmm. Right, Nevin? So tell us a little bit about that quote and how it came to be the title of your book.
Yeah, so actually it was my partner who came up with it. So thanks, Yvette. But a lot of the work that I do, Rhonda, is first of all about helping people develop some political will. And most people have very little political will. And I think it's because they fall victim to the five myths that I've written about, that I've extracted from the research that I've done, from the work that I've done. And these myths are as widespread as they are wrong. They're as universal, because I do this work all over the place. They are as universal as they are naive. And I mean, no disrespect to you, me, and everyone else who is allergic to this stuff. But the first myth is this myth that we think, well, I can either be a decent human being or I can be this raving psychopath who plays politics, because everyone knows that politics is revolting stuff. It's backstabbing. It's, I can think of plenty of other words that have been used. Let's not use them in a public forum. Although I was lecturing to a bunch of Nigerian women a while ago and they were saying, oh, it's the handbag carrying stuff, which I thought was so charming. I'd never heard handbag carrying, but I got the picture. And so we have a very singular, one-dimensional understanding, which is actually a misunderstanding of office politics. Of course it can be hideous stuff. Of course it can be Machiavellian and abusive and toxic. But actually the full range of politics is really about four things. It's about your strategic relationships, how you use them, how they help you, and how they don't just help you, but how they help your team. You know, this is about getting resources and making things happen for the people who are counting on you. It's about your reputation, what you're known for. It's about your power, and it's about your influence. And so absolutely, you can use those things to destroy other people. And let's not kid around. I mean, this can happen. But there are a range of ways that you can be constructive and legitimate and ethical in how you use these things to make things happen. And so this either or is a false either or. It's a false distinction. It can be a both and. You can play in the informal, unofficial space of politics and still hold on to your integrity, still look in the mirror and not feel ashamed at who you've become. I think the second myth is people think, oh, one day I'm going to go to some magical place, some fantasy faraway land where there are no politics and I can just get on with my job and do my stuff. And sadly, that's simply not the case. I mean, I have worked in all manner of environments, in all manner of countries, from NGOs to corporates to government. And you're going to find office politics everywhere. The kind of politics, the degree of politics, sure, that's going to be different, but you're not going to escape this stuff. And the third myth is this doesn't make a difference to your career or your success. Actually, this, when I talk about it in a fuller workshop, this is the part where it can sometimes get quite sad. Because this is a myth that I think, if you have it all of your career, can lead to enormous regret of all the things you didn't know and the things that you missed out on by thinking, I don't need to do this stuff. I just need to do my job and that's enough. It's not enough. Yes, in an ideal world, in a world that was more fair, it should be enough. It could be enough. But in this world, it's not enough. Your talent, your hard work are necessary, but they're not enough. You need more than relationships.
Niven, I want you to stop right there because this one,
I'm on a roll.
This one, we say this all the time on this show. This one could be a whole show all by itself, right? And the number of times, so I do executive coaching and I work with leaders all across organizations and domestically and globally. And I am constantly hearing my work speaks for itself.
Oh, yeah.
So. So talk to us about that, because if you all take nothing away from this conversation, I want you to hear that your work, yes, as good as it is, and it's very, very important, but it is simply not enough for you to get ahead. And talk to us a little bit more about that. And then I want to get Marae and Roz to weigh in on that as well and how they've seen that show up in either personally or in others around them.
Yeah, thanks, Rhonda. Look, I've heard it as well. I've said it as well. And it's exactly what you're saying. The reality is work does not speak. People speak. So who is speaking for you? What are they saying? And frankly, some of the best advice I got in my career, sadly, it's advice I didn't necessarily always follow. But it was that some of the most important decisions of your career are going to be made when you are not in the room. And so who is in that room for you? What are they saying? Your work's not in that room. It's people's interpretations and reflections and advocacy or not for your work.
Oh, my goodness. So you also said something there. I think this needs to go in a postcard. Niven, you've got to put this on a postcard. Your work does not speak. People speak.
Yes.
That is powerful. Because we think that I'm just going to put my head down and do my job and everybody's going to leave me alone. And that's the way it should be. And that's simply not reality. And I've seen many careers destroyed, derailed, impacted because people don't want to play the game and politics is a game. So Roz, let's come to you first and talk to us a little bit about how you see this showing up. And if you ever had this attitude of, well, my work just speaks for itself and not wanting to get into the fray of the politics.
Oh, yeah. I had that. I had a big attitude. I had a big head. You know, I'm coming in early. I'm staying late. I go to all of the meetings. I volunteer to scribe. But if you're saying work speaks for itself, the only way it speaks for itself is someone is listening. So you got to make noise. You got to make noise. Your voice can't be submerged. You have to make a noise. So, you know, just like Nivian was saying, if you don't, if nobody is listening, all that you're doing, nobody's paying attention. Nobody cares at the end of the day. And so I'm in the same place where she was. You know, I was doing all this work. It still wasn't enough. And when it was time to downsize and let go, I was one of those, even though I was coming in at 6, leaving at 6, I was putting in 12 hours a day. So I'm done speaking.
No, thanks. Thanks, Ross. That's really important. So let me bop out to Brian for a minute. Brian said he's got coffee with caramel in his cup. Thanks so much for sharing that with us, Brian. And he says, self-advocate. Yes. So self-advocate, Brian, I think definitely yes, and Murray, and there's more. It's more than advocating, right? It is understanding the power players, the positioning, all of that. And I'm sure that you've seen this quite a bit, Murray. Even in your industry, probably thinking, I'm a good worker, I'm technically competent and smart in these male-dominated fields, and why isn't that enough?
Oh my God, it's just, you know, on point, because, you know, I've seen it so much in the energy sector, where you have very talented women who have everything. I mean, and they don't go anywhere because they don't speak for themselves. They wait to be, you know, identified. And I was one of them, just, you know, doing my job, trying to be excelling what I was asked to do, but not going anywhere because I didn't speak. I didn't reach out to anybody. I didn't try to have any sponsor or any mentor that could actually speak for me when I was not in the room. And I paid a price. But when I understood that, then things started to move. And I started to really, you know, capitalize on my network, on, you know, being in the right forums to be able to be, you know, visible and to be able to advocate for myself. Because we talk about self-advocacy, really have this voice that, you know, people could hear. And that's a huge problem, I think, as we look at empowering women in male-dominated environment. Men are really, you know, they're really vocal. They know how to create those, you know, network, the boy clubs, and be in the right, you know, in the right rooms when it is about those, you know, those big, you know, getting promoted and everything. They ask for it. They advocate, they market themselves, and some of the women are just waiting, and they are really, really brilliant women, and they're just heartbreaking because they don't go anywhere. And I think that's something that needs to be, you know, tackled, you know, as you know, in male-dominated environment.
Nivin, one of the things that I tell my clients is you can't win the game because you don't know how to play. Right? You don't know how to play because you don't know the rules. And so the very first thing that we have to do is help people understand. So thank you for pausing a bit for that on that. I know that was number 3, but I was like, this is worthy of diving into a little bit more. So I think that you have another one on your list.
Yeah, and I suppose it amplifies the point that I was making, Rhonda, that you've just made. It's not just that people don't know the rules. They don't want to know the rules because, no, not that stuff. And if you can overcome that, well, then that's a big hurdle overcome. So the fourth one is that this idea, the myth that this stuff has disappeared in virtual environments. Wrong, wrong, wrong. I had a woman on a workshop a while ago saying, I've really had to understand that this stuff has not disappeared in virtual environments in the 2 years of COVID. I've disappeared. So my brand has gone for a ball of chalk because all that people have known of me and seen of me has been the circle with initials on the screen. Problem. How do you build relationships when you are invisible? And then the last one is this idea that, look, political intelligence, political smarts are a trait, are something that you are born with. And no question, some of the stuff, the relationship building, the advocating for yourself, of course it'll come more easily to some people than to others, for sure. But it is a skill for everyone that can be learned if you see the value and the importance. And so I suppose, again, just to amplify what you're saying, I always say, with this idea of this being a game, look, the formal side of organizations, of course they're real, of course they matter. The organograms, the delegations of authority, the budgetary allocations, yes. But just as real is the informal, the side that's not written down in standard operating procedures or policies and processes anywhere. And you can totally choose. It's your life. It's your career. Make the choices that you want to. You can choose to only focus on the formal and the visible and what gets said. But frankly, to do so at the expense of the informal and the behind the scenes and the relationships, well, you know, that's like playing tennis on half the court, soccer on half the field, because that informal side of organizations is just as real. And choosing not to understand the rules of that part of the organization, like I said, it's your choice, but it seems to me, knowing what I know now, you're really handicapping yourself in the reality and the game of an organization.
Wow, I think that's really powerful, because we're handicapping ourselves without awareness that we're doing so. Right? We are just thinking that we're just doing what smart, normal people would do, which is stay out of the politics, when it's exactly the opposite. Smart, normal people get into the politics and understand. And I think I want to just clarify, Niven. So there is the ugly side of politics, but then there is the functional, real, practical side. And it's all still politics, right? And it's so let me just back up a step and ask you a question. Is politics, when we're talking about that, is that really, is what we're really saying about interactions and relationships? Is that what we're focusing on when we're talking about office politics?
Yes, it's that. It's about building influence. It's about accruing power. It's about having your agenda heard and the resources coming to you that you need. And again, you know, let me amplify and emphasize, it's not just about you. If it is all about you, well, then you are slightly sociopathic. It has to be about your team and the resources that they need as well. And so I often, so I mean, there are many definitions of politics, and one of the challenges in the academic literature is, what definition are we going to use here, people? But the definition that I like is that it's about the informal, it's the unofficial, it's often the behind the scenes efforts to get information and to make things happen and to build relationships. Fine. But what I often say to people as well is, look, I'm the one getting the PhD in the subject, so I better know what I'm talking about. For everyone else, it doesn't care how, I don't care, and it doesn't matter how you define this. What matters is you get over those mental blocks around the political world. And so call it whatever you want. Call it stakeholder management. Call it getting effective in the informal space. Call it learning the relational rules of the game. I mean, it's all of those things. But if you have a picture that it's only one thing, and that picture makes you run away screaming, you've missed an opportunity here. You've missed quite a few tricks. So call it whatever gets you engaged, gets you inspired about this.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really good. Mireille, did you have something?
Yeah, I just wanted to say sometimes there's also a bit of ignorance, especially when we shift from, a very academic, academic environment, school and everything, to move into working for an organization. We tend to always bring this, this idea that it's all about our result. It's all about, what we know and the expertise that we have. And we don't really know that there's another dimension into all of this when we get into the corporate world. And it's not always that obvious, even for, in the corporate world, that, they tell you exactly that this part is really the important part, especially at a certain level when you want to reach, the decision-making position. So that's what I wanted to add.
Yeah, I think that's so right. And oh my goodness, we've got a really great question out here too. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to show the question, and then we're going to go and we're going to take our greatness engineering break minute. and then we'll come back and we'll start responding to Andy's question, which is a good one. Mm-hmm. Hey, Andy, great to see you. Thanks for tuning in. Andy says, your work doesn't speak, people do. Isn't that the problem and the cause of a classic toxic workplace? Oh man, Andy, you opened up a good one there. We're going to talk about that one right on the other side of our Greatness Minute, and we'll be right back.
Hello everyone, this is Mariah, the Greatness Engineer, with you today. I want to talk today about the cost of greatness. And you know that greatness is not unique to anyone. You know, we are all capable of being great, all of us. But the difficult part is to take the first step. If you don't believe in yourself and if you don't take this first step, you are gonna struggle, and it's gonna be very difficult for you going forward. So know that you can't mistakenly be great. There are things that you need to do. There are things that you need to give up. There are things that you need to sacrifice. And there are things that you need to change in your life. So that's why I have a few questions for you. Do you believe in yourself? And what are the promises that you've made to yourself to become great? What are the things that you're gonna give up? You know, how are you going to pay to get this greatness that you are looking for? So if you choose to sacrifice your comfort zone, that's fine, you know, greatness will be there. But if you choose comfort, then you're gonna sacrifice your greatness. And as a matter of fact, you're gonna sacrifice your life. So I encourage you to think about what you want to sacrifice and the promises that you want to do to yourself to become great. Because greatness, it's actually at your doorstep, but you need to do the work and you need to know what you're gonna give up to be able to go to the next step and attain this greatness that you're looking for. So that's all I have for you today. See you next week.
Oh my goodness. Sacrifice. You've got to sacrifice something. Sacrifice the comfort zone and making that decision consciously, Marae, I think is one of the struggles that we all have, right? Is mm-hmm. to not just let it happen, but to decide that, yeah, I'm stepping out of my comfort zone because I'm headed for more in my life. Mm-hmm. So thank you for your Greatness Minute this week. All right, Niven, Andy had a question out there. Let's dive into his question. How would you respond? And let me put it back up on screen for everyone here. So here was Andy's question. Your work doesn't speak, people do. Isn't that the problem and the cause of a classic toxic workplace? What do you say about that, Niven?
Whoa. Andy, I've got so much to share. Rhonda might have to interrupt me. Look, so a couple of thoughts. Somebody said to me a while ago, yes, but politics are a symptom of a toxic culture. And as somebody who's done a lot of work on culture and strategy in my career and the politics stuff, I really had to push back somewhat. And I said, you know what? I don't think that's the case. I think toxic politics are a symptom of a toxic culture. But politics are a part of every culture. The degree of the politics, the nature of the politics, yes, this we must talk about and this we can talk about. But I think before we talk about it, I think we also need to be really clear around what toxic actually is. And I was working with an executive team a while ago, and one of the members of that team was saying, no, we're toxic in this place. And I could see everyone else getting quite uncomfortable. And we really had to unpack it because I said, look, toxic is not something you can throw away as just one of those words. Toxic means something very specific. And if you're going to say something is toxic, know what you're talking about. What you're talking about is almost relentless abuse, an undermining of your competence, of your confidence, gaslighting. I mean, the worst example I've heard, and I hope I never hear a worse one because I can't imagine a worse one, is a friend of mine who has a friend who for the last year has been battling pancreatic cancer. She now weighs 40 kilos. She's my height. Things are not great. She's had the surgery, the chemo, and now it's too late. And she said to this friend of mine, Vicky, and bear in mind that this woman is an executive in a listed company, so she's not someone without agency and power. She said to Vicky last year that actually 2022 had been the best year of her life. So, of course, Vicky's trying to understand this and saying, wow, with everything that you've gone through. And I mean, I've had cancer. I know it can teach you many things, but I would not say that it was the best year of my life, not by a long shot. And so Vicky was trying to understand why she said this. And she looked at her and she said, because for the whole year, I haven't had to go to the office. Now, that is toxic. Okay. Mm-hmm. Where you'd rather be fighting for your life, literally, than metaphorically by going into work every day. So when we talk about toxic, it is a very particularly advanced, particularly hideous, particularly insidious form of politics. And my advice is, if you're in a toxic workplace, three words, run like hell. Okay, you're not going to change it. It is going to really undermine you in all kinds of ways. But for the rest, you know, there's really a spectrum of politics, minimally politicized, moderately politicized, highly politicized. And in a highly politicized environment, most of what actually happens in that organization happens in the informal political space. And you can throw your hands up in horror and find another place to work because it's not your cup of tea, cup of coffee. Or you can understand, this is what it takes to be effective in this organization. Now, am I prepared to do that or am I not? And if you are, how are you going to do it in a way that is effective? And if you're not, prepare to have all kinds of costs and risks and mistakes pile up as a result. So yes, in a nutshell, advocating for yourself can be obnoxious. You can have your ego enter the room 2 minutes before you do. Okay, thanks, but no thanks. Or it can simply be part of how you build a reputation, build the relationships that allow you to get things to happen. And like I say, toxic is a world apart. Toxic is very specific.
Sorry, I love that, because one of the things that I am constantly doing is sort of pushing back on people who use the term toxic too loosely.
Yes.
And what happens when we do that is it loses its steam, right? It loses its impact and effectiveness. When we're talking about toxic workplaces, we should be very specific about why is that workplace toxic? Well, because your boss doesn't listen to you, that's not a toxic workplace, right? So exactly. That's just a boss who doesn't listen to you. We need to be very clear about these terms instead of just sort of using it very generally. So I love the way that you responded to that question, because it's not, I don't think it's optional. I thought it was optional. I thought politics was optional. But as you're saying, it's now just a part of how you interact. And I like to think of it as the way that you move, right, in the workplace and space. One of the things we were talking about before the show is the leader's responsibility in understanding that your workplace has politics. Okay? That's not a question. That's a statement. Your workplace has politics. And so how do you as a leader navigate that? And what is the leader's role, Niven, in setting the environment that those politics will take place in?
So I think that's a great question, because I mean, the reality is that politics is at all levels, but it becomes more important the more senior you become, because then it's less about the technical work. I mean, then it's the people below you who are doing the technical work. Your role is to navigate the landscape. Your role is to advocate for your team. And you're not going to do that simply on the technical merits of your case. That's about who's in your corner, who's supporting you, all the stuff we said before. So two thoughts. I think the responsibility on the leader is firstly to get involved in this stuff and to get skilled in this stuff. I had a delegate a few months ago say in a workshop, I really, really rate and respect the leader that I have, and I'm leaving her team. Okay, tell me more. She said, because she refuses to get involved in the political side. And this is how things work in this organization. You don't succeed. You won't succeed without socializing your ideas. So you need to have the meetings before the meetings. You need to pick up the phone. You need to have a coffee. You need to make sure that people are on board when you walk into that meeting, instead of thinking that your technical solution is going to be enough. And I mean, Marae, as a engineer, I can imagine this speaks to you even more so. And she said, and my manager just refuses to do that. She said, we shouldn't have to. yes, again, in an ideal world, you shouldn't have to. But in this world, you do have to. And the fact that you're not means that we're really suffering as a team. So I'm moving to somebody else mm-hmm. who can make that happen on our behalf so that we can get things done.
Oh, my goodness.
And I think the second thing is Sally Krawchik, and it builds on the conversation we were having earlier. She said something fabulous a few years ago. She wrote a LinkedIn blog, which was particularly about women, but I don't think it's only true of women. And she said the single biggest mistake that people make at work is that we treat work like school. So mm-hmm. we think we put our head down, we work really hard, somebody's going to give us an A. And as a leader, you need to understand that that's not the case for you, and you need to help your team understand it's not the case for them. Your job is to make all kinds of things happen, and to do that, you need other people. To do that, you need to build the relationships. To do that, you need to play in the political space.
Niven, but I like A's.
Don't you all? I was an all-A scholar, I'll have you know, Rhonda. I have just got the prize for the best PhD student. So I love A's too. Again, they're not an either-or thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, to amplify this point, I was lecturing to a number of women professors at one of our universities here. Smart, smart woman. And the one woman was quiet the whole way through, but I could see she was very engaged. And at the end of the day, she said to me, "I'm a poster child for all the stuff that you're saying." She said, "Because I was sitting there thinking, I'm not getting ahead. I know what I'll do. I'll go get another PhD. So she'll go spend another 5 years of her life studying something. And yes, of course, in academia, your qualifications, a PhD is a currency, but you've got one PhD. Another PhD is not going to change things unless you start to change and show up differently. So I love those A's too, but how do we define what an A is? Mm-hmm. Is it in resources? Is it in recognition? Is it in promotion? Is it in visibility? Is it in access to decision makers, to projects? It's not about somebody tapping you on the shoulder and saying, "Well done, aren't you just a fabulous star?"
All right, Roz mm-hmm. has a question. Roz, wow, it's really good. Yeah. And it's kind of gone a place that I wasn't anticipating, but it's really got me thinking about really how all of this plays out in our day-to-day world. Go ahead, Roz.
You already kind of touched on it, is because when I was working in corporate, you know, my parents said, you know, go to work, don't get involved in anything. That's the first thing they said. You know, look at what the job description is and do the job description and bring your behind home. You know, that was it. You know, work hard, they're going to recognize it. But, you know, they never did. Just like I said earlier, I don't care how hard I work, but part of this, the reason why some of us may keep our head down is because of what we've been taught at home.
Yeah, sure.
And what others have done in the past. And then when we get into the office and we see the politics, it may not be something that, you know, we even want to get involved in. And some people may not want promotion. They may have the leadership skills and characteristics and everything, but they may not want it. Mm-hmm. They may not want it. So I just wanted to put that out there, you know, how, you know, to keep your job, you know, you've been trained at home, you know, keep your nose to the grindstone, don't get involved. And then now we come to work and now we have to get involved, but I don't want to.
Mm. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. cool.
Yeah.
That's how a choice you're making. Yeah, Niven, it's an okay choice as long as you're making it with the awareness of the yes. consequences, yes. right? Mm-hmm. So great, don't get involved. But when everything is happening around you, when everyone's being promoted, when your salary is stagnant, when you're not invited to the meeting before the meeting or the meeting after the meeting, then don't be surprised because you've made a choice that you don't mm-hmm. want to get involved.
Oh, I couldn't agree more, Rhonda. It is your life. It is your career. It is your set of values and your choices. Make the choices that you want to make. But for heaven's sake, as Rhonda says, make them from an informed perspective. Mm-hmm. Make them aware of the, make them from a place where you are aware of the risks and the implications of making those choices, and then make them. Yeah. Don't make them from a place where you don't actually know what you're talking about. You don't understand the implications. And you're doing this because it sounds like sensible advice. It sounds like decent advice. And in another world, it would be. But in this world, particularly if you're wanting to become more senior, and I totally agree, not everyone does, but if you're wanting to, this is part of what it takes.
There's another element to it, Marae, and I bet you see this. And then, Niven, I want you to talk about sort of, I'm going to show the three elements that you talked about to help navigate office politics. But there's another element of this, and this has nothing to do with a career advancement, but it does have to do with your mental and emotional sanity and well-being. So if you, one way to help yourself feel better at work and to not lose yourself in everything happening is to understand how to navigate the politics from a perspective of sort of being able to thrive while it's all happening around you, right? Because you understand, you see the power players, you see who influences who, you understand, so you know how to move in that space so that you're not always at the end getting stressed out or overwhelmed or over, you know. So I think the other aspect of politics is your mental and emotional well-being. Mm-hmm. And Marae, I don't know if this sort of resonates with you.
It does, because that's actually why I left the corporate world 7 years ago, because, I was in an environment where, the type of politics that was played was not resonating with me. I knew that, in any organization to get, to the decision-making position, you had to play the politics. It's just that the kind of politics that I was exposed to didn't actually, resonate with me. So I decided to leave, the corporate world to become an entrepreneur and just build my network and interact, understanding that even as an entrepreneur, I had to rely on my, on my network and build relationship that will help me to actually be successful. So I resonate a lot with that.
Mm-hmm. No, that's awesome. It's just another aspect that we don't really think about, right? Mm-hmm. So when people are constantly, oh, I hate this job, I'm stressed out, it's really important to understand how they're navigating the politics that are taking place in their workspace. So Niven, you talk about a few things that people can do to navigate this a little bit better. I can't believe what time it is. Time is just flying by, right? And we're going to be done this show before we know it. So maybe before this, I'll take our other little break and then we'll come back and ask Niven to share with us a breakdown of those three aspects after we do our mini commercial for Ascension Leaders. We'll be right back.
Leaders today are faced with an exponentially evolving, dynamic workplace, but leadership is not a solo sport. It's critical to know who's on your team and to understand cutting-edge approaches to communication and influence. We invite you to experience the profound rewards of membership in Ascension Leaders, an above-the-grind community wherein today's leaders are empowered and inspired with unprecedented support to create modern, magnetic cultures. Modern magnetic cultures, also known as MMCs, are the ideal performance and fulfillment culture prized by successful leaders and their teams. We urge you to carefully consider the edge our members gain from this extraordinary group. Choose to achieve the clarity, velocity, and momentum of a modern ascension leader.
All right. So I want to help people understand how to navigate the politics a little bit better. So we've talked about a few things, but Niven, here you share with us that there are three elements that you often suggest: awareness, assessment, and action. So talk us through each of these.
Yeah. So the first one is I think very much the kind of conversation that we've been having now. Do you know what you're talking about? Do you understand the universe of possibilities, the universe of potential risks and mistakes in how you're acting, how you could be acting, how you're not acting? And for me, that's often an incredibly important breakthrough in and of itself. I was saying earlier that that lack of political will, in my experience, if I can break through that and get people to understand this differently, well, that's a huge job done. And so if our conversation now has already started to build awareness in people, that awareness doesn't exist in most people's experiences mm-hmm. or understanding of things. So don't underestimate that. I think the second thing is, as I say, the assessment. If the elements of political influence are around your relationships, your strategic relationships, are around your power, are around your influence, are around your reputation, well, how are you doing against all of those? How wide is your network? How varied is it? Who are your role models when it comes to power, and how are you showing up relative to how they are showing up? What kind of leverage do you have, and are you using it? Overusing it, not a good idea, but underusing it can be just as problematic. You know, what are you known for? What is the brand that you have? So really an understanding of how you're showing up relative to how you would like to show up. And just being aware and assessing that sometimes can also bring in some home truths. And James Baldwin, one of your authors, an American author from the 30s, I think he was saying not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it is faced, which I think is just wonderful and so wise. So understand, okay, where am I? And if people want to go onto my website, there's a free workbook, they can download it, whole bunch of interesting exercises, some self-assessment exercises that I've gotten from various places. The first one asks you, are you in a toxic workplace? Mm-hmm. And if you are, well, you need to think about this quite seriously. But then the rest are all around, who are the players in your environment? What kind of power do you have? What kind of leverage do you have? So really an opportunity to do a self-assessment. And then the third one is all around action. Okay, now what? You know, you get the what, you get the so what. Now what? What are you going to do about this? And so the last part of the exercise or part of the workbook is an exercise in crafting your political strategy. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much where I've spent 20 years of my career. And Rhonda, I imagine this is a lot of the work that you do in your coaching. What are you going to do about this? And strategy is one of those words that people throw around to sound important, to sound impressive. But simply speaking, it's about how. How are you going to get from where you are to where you want to be? Who do you need on side? Who do you need to convince? Who do you need to engage with? How do you need to spend your time and energy? And so that then becomes an ongoing thing, because as contexts change, so strategies change. And as your goals change, so your strategies to reach them need to change. That then's the rest of your career, to the point where, you know, you do this enough, you think about it often enough, you become unconsciously competent. It's not something that you have to deliberately think about to the degree that you may need to now. Mm-hmm. And again, to just totally echo what you were saying, there's all kinds of academic literature, and I'm plowing through it now for my PhD, all kinds of academic literature that people who are politically skilled are less stressed. And it makes sense, mm-hmm. you know, instead of tearing their hair out, confused and frustrated by the hypocrisy, it's like, okay, so this is how it works. Let's get going.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that is magical. So Nimit, I want to go back and just touch a little bit on the second one, assessment, because one of the challenges that I have to often gently broach with my coaching clients is how other people see you, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Which is often very different than the way that you see yourself. Yep. You see yourself showing up as this rock star. I'm doing my thing. I'm getting it all done. Everybody loves me. And you know what? In reality, when you come, they're leaving. They're leaving because they're like, oh, here she comes, all full of drama and blah, blah, blah. And all of this is going on. But if you don't know that, you have this totally different perception and you feel like things are being done to you mm-hmm. in a different way than they actually are. So I will share really quickly my own personal example of a time I was super unaware of how I was showing up. And this is another one. So if you're out there listening, if you're listening on the replay, how are you showing? How do other people see you? Not how you see you, because you think you're great. Don't we all? But how do other people see you? So I was, when I took over as a chief nursing officer, super busy, lot to do, running around, getting everything done. And and just thought that I was doing my thing, right? I'm getting it done. And people started making little comments, and my CEO in particular was, he made a couple of little joking comments about, oh, Rhonda would rather be in her office with the door closed, just getting stuff done. And the first time I heard it, I thought, oh, you know, that's kind of funny. The second and third time I heard it, I thought, oh my gosh, there's a message here, right? Mm-hmm. People are seeing me as disengaged from other people and other members on the team. And all I care about is this work, which was kind of true when I put my head down and I really thought about it, which was like, oh my gosh, I am doing that, right? And mm-hmm. and other people are seeing that, but I was totally unaware of it in the moment. And those little jokey comments that people were making, oh, you're too this, and oh, you're always this, they're not really jokes. So I think mm-hmm. we should be paying attention to that. That was my own personal moment of mm-hmm. really awakening about the mm-hmm. disconnect that I had between how I was showing up and how others were seeing me. So just wanted to just highlight that for people. So Andy said, could you define a toxic workplace where you should run like hell? Thank you.
Yeah, so Andy, there's a couple of things, there's a checklist of things. But essentially, and like I say, you can go through the full checklist if you grab the workbook. But essentially, it's about constant and debilitating fear. Mm. Fear of saying the wrong thing, fear of doing the wrong thing, fear of having things used against you. You feel that all day, every day, in every way. Well, then you are probably in a toxic environment. And, you know, what I say to people, what is toxic a synonym for? Poison. What is poison designed to do? Kill you. You feel that degree of stress. And again, you know, Rhonda, I can only violently agree with what you're saying. A boss who doesn't listen, colleagues you don't particularly enjoy, people whose jokes you don't find funny, you're never going to invite to your house. That's not toxic. Toxic is, as I say, constant, debilitating fear.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Thank you for that definition and breaking that down. And Christina's out there. Hey, Christina, it's great to see you. I don't think we've seen you in a little while. We in Sweden need global workplace bullying awareness 2023. Yeah, I can imagine we all need this. So we're getting close to the end of our show. So we're going to have to wrap up. We didn't even get to our top two today, but I didn't want to disrupt our conversation anymore because it was so juicy. All right. So first thing we need to do, we need to take our picture. So Niven, you can just hold up your cup of the water. It's all good.
Boring water.
Smile. Got it. Okay. That will be our post-production picture. And Andy says, got it. Thank you. I'm glad that was helpful for you. And so when we come back, we're going to start so Andy has another question. He wants to know how do you get the workbook?
So just go to my website, nivenpostma.com, and it's there available for free.
Okay, awesome. Thank you so much, Andy. And we'll have, Niven, we'll have you repeat that again as we wrap up. So we're going to ask all of you out there listening, if you've been listening for a little bit and you want to drop something in the comment, please feel free to do so. But this is the What's in Your Cup segment. And What's in Your Cup is really about, what have you gained from this conversation, right? We sort of liken it to pouring something in your cup over the hour of the show. So what's in your cup? And we're going to come back and start our wrap up and talk about what's in all of our cups right after this. Okay. Did I ask you all to like and share the video? I told you in the beginning that this was going to be a good one. So if you have not liked the video and shared it with your network, please do so now. Someone else out there has questions and wants to hear about this topic. And just like it was insightful for you, hopefully it will be for them also. So let's start our wrap-up segment. Ms. Roz Jones, what did we put in your cup today?
Well, mine started before the show, so I'm going to give that one first. Niven said, we get what we demonstrate and we get what we tolerate. That was number one. And then the other one was, how do you build a relationship when you are invisible? So those are the two nuggets that she has left with me today.
That's pretty awesome. Thank you so much for that, Roz. Yeah, how do you build a relationship? And as an introvert, I will tell you, I don't mind being invisible, but it's not where I can't accomplish what I am wanting to accomplish in terms of global leadership impact, being invisible. Right. So me and my little introverted self are just going to have to figure that out. So, Lorraine, what's in your cup?
Oh gosh, there's so much in my cup, but I think for me, it's more about the awareness that politics is everywhere. It's just, you know, at a different degrees in, you know, in different organizations, and really understand that, you know, we are an active participant, and we can either decide to participate or, you know, find another way to get out of it, but do it in a responsible way and be aware of, you know, the risk and the consequences that are, you know, associated with it.
Yeah. Wow. That's a good one. The awareness mm-hmm. is powerful, right? When you act from a place of awareness. So we've got a mm-hmm. couple of last comments out there before we ask Niven to share her final thoughts. Thanks so much, Dream Life Coach. What a blessing this information is for those that are working a job. I have my own business. I'm learning from all of you. Phenomenal, fantastic, amazing, powerful women. This is a powerful Linda Tate. Thank you so much for tuning in, Linda. It's great to see you here. Andy says, I understand what happened to me with certain clients, despite me being correct on merits. My cup is full. Thank you so much, Andy. So glad that we were able to contribute. And he said, brilliant session. Fantastic. So Niven, we come to you for your final thoughts. What do you want people to take away from this conversation? And then tell people, remind them again how they can reach you and get some of your free tools.
Thank you. Yeah, I think this stuff matters. This stuff really matters. It matters to you, to your career, to your health, to your team, to the legacy you're trying to live. And knowing that it's a both and, you don't have to sacrifice your values. You don't have to sell your soul, but you also don't have to see your career just float away to nothingness because you haven't engaged. And my cup is full, I have to tell you, Rhonda, because that arsehole, a recovering stressed out leader, is so hilarious. I'm going to be sharing it with everyone in the next 2 days. I love things that make me laugh out loud, and that certainly did. So thank you.
And I captured that laugh out loud. We've got it on video now, Niven. We can replay it over and over.
Great.
That's fantastic. And then you said people can reach you on your website.
Ah, yes, thank you. So it's Niven. I didn't put my surname in, but Postma. So Postman, but without the N on the end, .com. And I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. That's how you and I met. Yes. So they're more than welcome to connect with me on LinkedIn as well.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Niven. It's been such a pleasure having. I've had a lot of fun on the show today. You know, my takeaway, I've been thinking about this, and often I try to get to my bottom line before the show. And I've learned a lot today on the show, and awareness is big. Awareness is one of them. Making conscious decisions about how you play the game and how you show up. Ultimately, what I like to say is everything you do is about one thing, is getting more of what you want and less of what you don't. Everything that you do is about getting more of what you want and less of what you don't. Office politics is something that can help you with that. So here's my last drop for today. There's an easy way to eliminate office politics for good. Get rid of all the people. Short of that, get an emotional intelligence tune-up and become the master of your own destiny. That's my advice, and that's my final takeaway. It's not going away, and neither are the people. So we might as well learn to do it and do it well. So that will wrap us up for today for my guests and co-hosts. I'll see you all in a few minutes in a deep breath. For everyone else out there, this has been wonderful. Thank you for your thoughts, your comments, your questions. It powers our conversation, and we love having you be a part of it. So we'll see you back here next week, same time, same station, for another episode of the Coffee with Rhonda Show. Until next time, take care, everybody.